Hi, today's July 1st, 2018. This is MobiViews Podcast 259. I'm Todd Agasa-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. We're back after a two-week hiatus.
Recharged. Some shows take off months and months, and, you know, if you're looking for a new Game of Thrones, that's not going to be till next summer, but if you're looking for a new MobiViews Podcast, we're only going to take off 2 weeks at most, because we have respect for our listeners.
That's right. Respect for all five of you.
Yes.
Or thereabouts. Okay, so you know what? Not a whole heck of a lot happened in the last 2 weeks from the way I reckon things. How about you, Dan?
Nothing stood out too much, although for a week of that, I was at the beach playing with the technology I already had. So that's the bulk of what we can discuss today after we get through some of the news items. One of the news items that you did point out is one that I did notice, and I'll talk a little bit about.
But. Okay. So a couple of things that actually happened in the last 2 weeks. I kind of just jotted things down as things seemed reasonably interesting. One is Google released their own podcast app for Android, and it's called, ta-da, Google Podcasts. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know, it's okay. I tried it. Then I went back to my iPhone. where I do not use the iPhone or Apple's podcast app, by the way. I use Overcast. From, I think, Marcus Amont. And I think John recommended that to me years ago when I got sick and tired of Apple's terrible, terrible podcast app. The Google Podcasts, plural, app is not terrible. It's kind of very basic. I don't know. I mean, it does what you want a podcast app to do, I guess. It'll let you find a podcast, subscribe to it, download it, and play it. And, you know, I guess it does that okay. No complaints.
Seems reasonable. You know, I use Overcast like you do, and I don't think I use most of the features that are even on Overcast. So
yeah. Now, one feature I did find in Overcast that I only use on one podcast is there's one podcast I listen to where the podcaster, who's all by himself, he has no partner or co-host, whatever you want to call him, speaks really slowly like this. And I think it's great if you have problems concentrating. or for me, it actually causes a concentration problem. So I use Overcast speed feature to speed it up by 40% without changing the pitch, so it doesn't sound like a chipmunk.
Yeah, I use that same feature on most of the podcasts I listen to, and I put it up to about 1.1 or 1.2 times. Not too fast, but. It lets me get through an hour podcast in about 55 minutes, so it's helpful.
Yeah.
I live in academia where an hour is 50 minutes, so.
That's right. This is about an hour. And I should know that what I do with this podcast, and also Comics Views, the other podcast I do with Jay Stone, is I run it through a silence truncation filter. So before you hear it, it reduces certain delay lags between what John and I, say. And as you may know, there's this kind of a natural lag in any conversation between two or more people. Most people don't talk over each other. We do sometimes, but, most people don't talk over each other. They kind of pause and wait for the other person to finish. And it turns out for John and me, that's a little under 5% of our overall discussion time. Actually, I think it's like 4.5. But
we really need to break it down by who's doing it, because that might even be more interesting to see if there are common denominators. And I suspect that I may have more or fewer or something like that. We'll have to do that at some point when we have time to kill.
And we have enough tools to do it, right? So right now, this truncation feature is automatic. So, I don't even know. I just know that it kills dead air. So
literally, we are already having time to kill. That's what we're doing when we use this feature. Killing time.
Yeah. Okay, next up is another Google thing that I have not tried, and I'll tell you why. So, one of the great things about Google Voice is that in addition to getting it on your phone, unless you have a Google Fi, in which case you can't use Google Voice at all, you could go to voice.google.com and triage your text messages there using, full-size keyboard and a big screen. And it's wonderful, really. It's wonderful. But if you move to Google Fi, you can't use Google Voice anymore, or at least you can't use it with your phone. I ended up creating a second account for my Google Fi account so I could keep my Google Voice. service available, but I can't tie that. Oddly enough, it only works on my iPhone. It don't work with my Android phone, which is on Google Fi, because it just wants you to use their messages. So anyway, Google introduced Google Messages for the web at messages.android.com a couple of weeks ago, and that kind of takes care of it, I guess. And I say I guess because I haven't tried it. And the reason I haven't tried it is tied to your phone number. And you know, so well, what is that? You know, so what? So wait, Google, it's different from the way Google Voice works. Google Voice provides you with a phone number, and then you can choose to view it on a computer's desktop notebook computer, on a tablet, on a phone, except for Google Fi, or you know, whatever you want. And it just sort of work. Messages.android.com. Only works with the number it's tied to, and I'm a little bit worried about what happens when I activate that. So I've gone to messages.android.com. I have not activated yet. And activation involves taking a photo of a barcode and activating it that way. It's a little odd, too, you know, versus just logging in.
That does seem a little strange.
Yeah.
I think because I was wondering why you hadn't tried this, and now I can see your hesitancy because of your unique setup. And honestly, that's sort of what happens, unfortunately, with power users, is that we have unique setups because we played with everything when it came out.
Yeah.
And so we are the ones that have the old Google Voice numbers, or the ones that have, I mean, your number and my number date back to Grand Central.
That's right.
Which was the service before Google Voice. So I think it's one of those, I mean, I remember picking out my Grand Central number and knowing where I was, it was something like 2004 or 2005 I picked out that number. So it's very hard, I think, for technology companies to create products now. You're obviously assuming that most of your users are going to be users that have only started playing with whatever feature in the latest release or maybe the one previous. It must be difficult when you've got people who've got features that you've had an infrastructure for 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
You're trying to get them on board with the latest. So I understand why you're hesitant, because I also understand why if I was Google, I'd be hesitant to have certain people join up too quickly.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to wait to see if, you know, other people much braver than I try this and see if they get burned or not. Hopefully not. I haven't seen a lot of noise about the system in general, you know, pro or con. So it's kind of hard to tell what the adoption rate is like. Okay. Next up is something I was going to ask you about, John, because I think you tried it, and that's Anchor FM.
I have tried it, and I am still working with it in a sense. So I launched a podcast about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, called Prof Podcast.
Yep.
We still have we have two episodes up, and we're on a little bit of a hiatus while I retool and figure out the best way for us to record. And one of those things that was a little frustrating was Anchor.fm, the service that we use for distribution and for recording, it didn't have the best sort of coherence to its tools. And so you've got in here that Anchor for iPad has finally been released. That's good. That's a step in the right direction. And some of the screenshots look like it has some of the tools that I might need. And introducing recording with friends, you can record with your friends directly to Anchor as a snippet that you can then add into a podcast episode.
Yeah.
My frustration with Anchor was mostly that the interface was just half-baked. There were things that wouldn't work right. You drag something somewhere, it wouldn't stay there. It just looked like a lot of UI issues.
Mm.
So I ended up, for those first two episodes of Prof Podcast, putting them together old school using Audacity and just putting them together and then popping them up on basically one giant audio file on Anchor's server. So I'm hopeful that once I get a few weeks, I might go back to my co-hosts with Prof Podcast, and we might get some episodes going using these new tools. But I have not had a chance to play with them yet. I just looked at them and went, yep, that seems to be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, my dream for a long time has been able to record a multi-panel, you know, multi-person podcast using an iPad and iPhone. I guess it's possible using, what was that service you used with us a while back?
Zoom.
Zoom.us. And that worked out pretty well, I thought. But it does cost money, and I'm cheap. So I think it costs more per year than what I'm using right now, which is pretty reasonably priced. I think I'm paying about $50 a year for my podcast hosting service. So I looked at this with interest because apparently this Anchor stuff is free, including the distribution and all that of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So it looked interesting, but it, you know, the Anchor with Friends and the Anchor for iPad. But maybe I'm so stuck in my ways after doing this for nearly 10 years in this one way that I'm kind of reluctant to switch unless I can see some real advantages and ease. I might revisit. Maybe we'll do a mini podcast using it and see how it works.
Well, that's definitely one of the reasons why I kind of put a halt to my show for a little bit and retooled it a little, was because it was pretty time-consuming to put together through Audacity, put in clips from people, do the volume leveling, remove the the silence, add in the
theme. What are you using for volume leveling?
Audacity has a plug-in for it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm still using Levelator, but...
So I'm going to play around with this a little more, and hopefully Prof Podcast will make a resurgence, and maybe we can do a few Mobile Views episodes through Anchor as well.
Okay, the next one I found personally interesting because, you know, we've been talking, you and I have been talking a lot about blue light and some of the features in iOS and other operating systems that allows you to reduce the amount of blue light displayed on a screen. After a certain hour of the day, you know, usually nighttime, mm-hmm. usually for most of us, you know, say 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. So you still use your screen, but it just reduces the amount of blue, which is, you know, associated with things like keeping you up and all that, so, you know, basically keeping you awake. This blog, however, fastcodesign.com, talks about, you know, generally speaking, the blue light of modern touchscreens, which may look nice but poses some health problems, you know, beyond sleep. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I'm not going to say a whole heck of a lot of it about it because I just haven't seen enough evidence for anything except for the wakefulness part for blue lights. But it certainly seems to be a well-done article, and, you know, after I look up some references, maybe I'll have more to say, and I was hoping John might be interested in it sometime too.
Yeah, I think as someone who studies consciousness on occasion and psychology, I'm always a bit interested in how these things work and if there's anything behind them. And I think we thought for a long time there was something behind them, and now we're not so sure because it kind of took off very quickly, and now we're just trying to figure out what's true and what isn't.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll put the link in and folks can do their own research and maybe get back to us. Okay, so John, the reason we had a hiatus was John was on vacation for parts of the last 2 weeks, the whole 2 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, it was the full week, and then I actually got back late Saturday night last week. So okay. I've been back for a little over a week now.
Yeah. And I was too lazy to go find our other friends to go do a podcast. I had stuff to do, so I figured, just skip it. But we're back, and so John's got his annual vacation travel report.
Well, and this is a little bit more toward the idea of vacation tech.
Yeah.
And I think that we sort of think about tech in a bubble of this will be cool, that'll be cool. We don't always think about what we're actually using our tech for. So I have a few points and kind of walk through them.
Yeah.
This was a family vacation. We were at the beach and had a rented house that my wife's family was staying at because we have now basically four families inside of the larger family. So there were 10 adults and 3 children. And first thing was that a point-and-shoot camera, preferably with GPS, is still a must. Even though our phones are very good at what they do, when I was sitting at the beach, I wanted my phone to be turned off so that it wouldn't overheat, or, you know, also just didn't want to be beeping or putting in my bag, et cetera, et cetera. So when you had a cute picture of a kid doing something in front of you that you wanted to save, it was real quick to pull out a point-and-shoot camera, turn it on, take pictures. We also had a little bit of lighting differences, so people sitting under tents on the beach. And if you try to take a picture under that tent, you're not going to get a lot of light. So having manual exposure controls was really nice to get those pictures so that there was enough light to actually see the people who were under the tent right next to you when you were taking the picture.
Okay, so two things I want to mention. One is a point and one is a question. And the point is, you know, John mentioned about his phone overheating. You know, in Hawaii, we, you know, despite what you may think of Hawaii, although we're a subtropical, we really don't get that hot because of the moderating influence of the ocean breezes. So if we get to 90, it's kind of unusual in my recollection. In the past week, we're maybe in the low 80s, 82, 83, 84. But I remember a friend of mine posted that he was driving around with his, I think, his sunroof open. His phone was, I would guess, somewhere on the seat or somewhere, you know, under the sunroof, open sunroof. And he got a warning that it was overheating.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you don't have to be in Las Vegas summer heat or Death Valley, California or someplace like that. Or you can be in a regular, you know, 80s kind of temperature. And if you have direct sunlight on your device, it will overheat and will shut down.
I had it just a little bit. We were listening to music by the pool, and I brought out my Bluetooth speaker, which, as I put a little bit later on our list, it's time for me to consider replacing because it's not as loud as current Bluetooth speakers, and it's about 5 years old, but that's another story. And also one of the buttons broke on it, so it might really be time to replace it. But I put my phone on top of just a outdoor chair and had it streaming, and all of a sudden the music went off, and I went over and phone had turned itself off. I had to put it under some shade. And the screen wasn't turned on. It was just that it was streaming music, and that was enough of an intense operation for it to heat up.
Okay. And now the second item is a question. The question is this. So, you know, you're mentioning your point-and-shoot camera, and we're going to talk about, and you mentioned GPS. In my experience, if I turn on my GPS-enabled camera, I happen to have an old Canon. It's probably about 4 years old now. It takes a while for it to acquire enough satellite data to determine its GPS location. You know, I don't think it has Wi-Fi, GPS assist, or anything like that. So it'll take maybe a minute or two before it gets GPS coordinates. Is yours faster than that?
So mine is about as old. In fact, it's a little older, I think. Mine is actually around 6 or 7 years old now. It's a Panasonic Lumix.
Okay.
I noticed that it takes a while to get that first lock.
Right.
But if I've been turning it on and off and I've been in the same geographical area, it tends to be able to maintain a lock a lot easier.
That's interesting.
Now, the reason it might do that is also kind of a problem with the way the Lumix is designed. If you keep GPS enabled, it periodically turns on the GPS, gets a location, and turns off.
Yes.
And I know that it has drained my battery in the past.
Ah, yes, that's what happened to me too.
Although it didn't do it as badly this time, and I haven't replaced the battery. I only charged the battery one time for the whole trip, and it seemed to work just fine. But what I find is that you have to, even if you've had the GPS off, which I usually leave it off when it's sitting in a drawer. I don't, you know, I mean, it's going to run down the battery anyway. But I'll also leave it off. When I get there, turn it on, and then charge the battery again, and then it seems to be fine. But if you charge the battery before you leave home and then turn the GPS on, it seems to run it down quicker. It's almost like it needs a very freshly charged battery. So I always carry the charger with me when I travel. That's the annoying thing about having an older phone is that my phone will not charge its battery through USB. It needs to have its little portable charger.
You're a camera.
Yeah. My camera, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I had similar experience where my Canon has a feature that lets GPS be on all the, or, you know, wake up periodically and figure out where it is, even when it's turned off. But like you, I found that sometimes, not always, not 100% of the time, but sometimes it just kills the battery. Mm-hmm. It'll go to zero. So
it probably has to do with where you're putting the phone, or the camera.
Yeah.
You know, if it's somewhere where you can easily, where it can get a lock, I think that probably helps. Yeah, it's a good thing to think about what exactly, where you're keeping it. Because if it's buried in a bag, it probably will use a lot of power to work.
Good point. Okay. Now, one of the things I commented to you before we started was that I haven't been able to find new point-and-shoot cameras with a GPS, but you said there are some.
Yep, I've found a couple of them. Because we have talked about this in the past. I talked with one of our mutual friends, Jason Dunn, about this.
He's been on the podcast.
He said, look at rugged versions. And sure enough, the Nikon Coolpix line has GPS chips in there in the rugged versions, and there's an Olympus that has a GPS chip. So you just have to kind of look around. They're not as popular as they used to, but it definitely is something that you can find if you look.
I wonder why it became less popular, though. I mean, it would seem like it would be a desire. Well, it seems to me it is a desirable feature, at least to you and me and other people I know. And it helps combat against, you know, people just using their phones, which is why digital camera makers are kind of fading away into the sunset, because people are using their phones for everything now. You know, it used to be a lot of people would carry a phone and a digital camera. I know you do, I do, but very few other people do. And, you know, despite the lack of a true optical zoom beyond, say, 2x, people still say, eh, it's all right. I don't need to carry a camera. And they don't.
That's very true. One of the things that I did carry with me, though, was the little Apple SD card reader, because the devices I took with me were predominantly Apple devices, so I carried the SD card reader to move photos from my camera over to my phone, and that worked really well for video for photos. Doesn't work so well for videos, though. My camera takes videos in the MTS format, which is basically one big file that you then download, and you can use QuickTime to unpack it and save to MOV or MP4. It's a real pain, and the SD card reader has no idea what to do with it. iOS has no idea what to do with it to try to get those videos out.
You know, we have a couple, in addition, we have a mix of Canon and Panasonic Lumix cameras in this house still. And my recollection is there was an option in the Lumix that lets you record to either MOV or MP4 instead of MTS.
I'll have to take a look. I didn't see that, but maybe it is hiding in there somewhere and I've just never said it.
Yeah. That was my recollection, because I remember running into the same problem. Not so much moving it to an iPad or iPhone, but just in general, that MTS file is just out there.
Yeah, there's just no easy way to deal with it, I think. Yeah. Also, this was the first time I got to use my Apple Watch Series 3 cellular with full, like, to kind of its full potential. You know, I didn't go surfing with it like Apple says, but I did go out in the ocean with it many times, and also in the pool with it many times. So there are a few things that I noticed with that. The first was, once it finally realized that it had no connection to a Wi-Fi network or my phone, which sometimes took it a little bit of time to realize that. It would get its cellular connection, and it would do a really nice job with cellular. I'm on Verizon, so I have coverage nicely where I'm at, even if it's on the beach. I was able to get messages, so one morning I went out and set up our beach setup a little early and got messages going, oh, we're on our way, and I could dictate back messages, or I guess I could scribble them out with my finger. So that was kind of nice to leave the phone turned off and still be able to get messages or still call if needed. The water mode that you put your phone in is great to disable all the controls and then expel water when you turn it off. The interesting thing is it's not completely necessary, because it is, if you forget about it, like I did one time, I went into the ocean and forgot to turn that on. Your phone is okay, or your watch is okay. The weird thing is you can't really get it turned on at that point, because the screen is wet, your finger is wet. If it's salt water, it just, nothing works well on the digitizer at that point. So I had to get out of the water. I fought with it for about 10, 15 minutes, kind of standing there letting my arms dry out a little bit, but the waves were a bit too heavy that day, so I couldn't get it turned on until I went back up and sat on the beach for a few minutes.
Did you use the expel water mode on your watch after you came out pretty regularly?
Yeah, every time except that one time I already had it in the water mode when I went into the water. But like I said, if you never used it and you're worried because you forgot to turn on the expel water mode, it's fine. It just it won't do that little expel water, and your watch will probably show strange things because, or you're, you know, it's triggering on the with water kind of getting in the way of exact movements on the interface. But overall, I was very...
That's what it sounds like when you're expelling water.
Todd's expelling water. No water there to expel, but he expelled it.
Yeah.
I also used AirPods to pair and listen straight off of my watch instead of my phone. That was kind of cool. The weird thing I had with that was I've had my AirPods since they came out. I had them paired to my Apple account since they came out so I could use them on all my devices.
Mm-hmm.
But they did not work with my third-gen Apple Watch until I removed the pair and repaired them.
Hmm.
That took all of about a minute. It wasn't a long process, but it was just kind of interesting that every other device had no problem connecting, but the Apple Watch needed me to do that, and then it's been fine ever since.
I have a question about the AirPods, John, since I still don't have one. So, you know, being the cheapskate that I am, I bought a pair of $40 wireless Bluetooth earbuds. Right, so there's no cable between, just like the AirPods, there's no cable between the left and right earbuds. They kind of independently stick in your ear and you turn them on and they pair with a device and you can listen to stuff. Over time, I would say within 4 or 5 months of using it, the right earbud basically started to fade away. And it's not where the phone was in relative to the earbud. I could put it right next to it. It was still kind of wonky. And basically, after 5 months or 6 months or so, the earbuds are useless. Actually, within 5 months, they were useless. So I stopped using them. They're $40, so I figured, well, you know, I paid like $10 a month. It's like, you know, 2 grande lattes at Starbucks. So it's a shame, but, you know, it's not going to kill me. Now, the AirPods, have you noticed any dropouts and things like that with your... either a particular pod or in general, or, you know, in general?
I've not noticed any differences. I do tend to, just personally, if I'm going to use one AirPod, I tend to use the right one a little bit more than I use the left one, although I try to mix it up occasionally, just why not? But I've never, when I listen, I'm listening to both, I've never noticed a difference in volume. I've not had a problem. I've had them since they were released. I've also had the Beats Solo 3 headset since it was released, and I've had no problems with it either. So, you know, you pay more for these expensive headsets, but it's interesting when you break it down to the how much per month are you paying.
Yeah.
I suppose that I've had my AirPods now for about, I'm trying to remember when AirPods were released. AirPods... At least
a year and a half, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking that I'm probably at about, yeah, so they were released on December 13, 2016, could be ordered. I think I got mine right around Christmas, so I've had them for about 16 months now.
Yeah.
And so I've paid about $10 a month.
Yeah. And they're still working, unlike mine.
Yeah, they're working strong. I don't think I'll be, in fact, I've been thinking about when AirPods 2 are released, whenever the next gen of them are, if there's compelling reasons to upgrade, I probably will, and then just keep my current AirPods in my car or other places where sometimes I wish I had a Bluetooth headset, because my car has Bluetooth, but sometimes it's nice to just have it in your ear and not going through your car stereo.
Yeah.
So I'm planning that my AirPods will probably keep going for a while. They've given me no indication that they won't.
I think I'm going to wait. I've read rumors that the next-gen AirPods are coming out this fall, along with the, you know, iPhone, whatever the heck they're going to call it, 11. So I think I'm going to wait. You know, I was kind of tempted to try, well, you know, Amazon doesn't actually ship some of these wireless earbuds to Hawaii. I had to have my daughter bring it home with her from the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
She was up there, so I probably can't even order one anyway, so I'll just wait for the Apples to... arrive. I think that's my plan. Okay, next up on your travel tech list.
Next up, Google Photos was probably the easiest way I had to share a group of photos with 10 people and three children. Of course, the three children were all under 2 years, so they really didn't care too much about sharing photos. they liked having their photo taken. They were not all that into sharing them. Why Google Photo and not Apple Photos? Well, we had one or two people were on Android, so right then and there you couldn't really create a shared Apple photo library, although People in the family do use Apple Photo Library, so they do know how it works.
Right.
But it was just, I think, easier because it was unlimited. You could throw everything in there. We had professional photos done. I ended up uploading those to Google Photos so that I have those I can easily share out. And it's just easier when people say, hey, what were the photos from blank, to just send them a link and to not have to, you know, I can select exactly what photos I want on that link.
Yeah.
So Google Photos, I think, still has a lot over Apple Photos, although Apple's getting there. And I think with iOS 12, they'll get a few features that Google Photos even lacks. But Google Photos for the win.
Yeah, and you can create albums that you can share, and mm-hmm. it's pretty awesome.
Another thing for the win, I had a packable bag. These little bags you can kind of fold into a pocket. They kind of scrunch down.
Yep.
It was actually a messenger bag that I bought years ago. In fact, the particular model is no longer available, but the company is still around. And if you've never had one of these, they are great if you're going to the beach and you have some technology or you have some things that you want to stow, but you don't want to pack a whole separate bag for it, or you don't want sand getting in your regular day carry bag. This bag, I literally unfolded it, put my stuff in it, took it to the beach, came back, took everything out of it, threw it in the wash. It washed all the sand out, and then put it right back in its little pouch for the next trip. So it's something, if you've never considered, it's technology on a non-electronic level. It's technology in terms of storage, but it's a pretty cool ability that you might not have thought about before.
All right.
Similarly, I bought an expanding tech organizer bag from Amazon before I left that I highly recommend, and we can put a link in the show notes.
Yep,
it was about $30, but it had space for pretty much everything, including a full-size iPad Pro with a keyboard. So it was kind of a nice thing to keep in the hotel rooms that we were in and everything else, where everything was kind of in one spot. I hate when you're in a hotel room and you feel like you've got junk all over the place because you need to have this item charging or you need this little dongle out or whatever. And then finally, I mentioned that my Bluetooth speaker is dying. I think I'll probably have to look for a new one of those soon. I took all four of my primary devices, my iPhone, my iPad, Surface Pro from work, and MacBook Pro. I used three out of the four. So I'm curious, Todd, which one you think did not get used.
Surface Pro.
Why do you say Surface Pro?
Because the rest of your stuff is all Apple.
You're right. It was the Surface Pro. And it wasn't so much that it was the non-Apple device. It was that there was a night that I had to get out the MacBook Pro. Actually, two times I had to get out the MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And both of those times, whatever I was doing, it was easier to have a real laptop. I think it was laying in bed at one point. I was sitting up, and the Surface doesn't really sit that nicely if you don't have a flat surface.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I was shocked. I wondered if I'd use all of them, and I was happy that I did at least use three out of the four, or else I would have felt bad taking them. But I think in the future, the Surface Pro will probably stay home, especially now that we have the only reason I ever needed the Surface Pro was we used software at work that required Java on Windows.
Ew.
But we no longer use that software.
Oh, good.
So I am quite happy about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have not traveled with a notebook of any kind, Mac or Windows, I can't remember the last time I took one. Maybe 2011, 2012. So, you know, 5-6 years since I carried a notebook with me. Once the iPad and associated keyboards got good enough, I just didn't, and cloud storage became cheap and reasonably accessible. I just didn't need to carry a notebook with me anymore. So, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about. I'm getting to the point where I probably will not need a notebook. In fact, I was thinking about how my network attached storage unit over here has virtualization on it, and I could just use a virtual machine on there and connect up over the internet if I really needed Windows or Mac. So I might end up doing something like that with it.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, it's too bad that I still can't find a good... let me strike that. I still can't find a keyboard cover or case that is both affordable, useful, or usable, and durable. Because as you know, the $150 or whatever I paid for it, Apple Smart Keyboard is in tatters.
Mm-hmm.
From my iPad 9.7 inch. So I refuse to spend that much money again on a keyboard cover from Apple, at least. I've been keeping an eye on Logitech stuff, but it seems too big to me. Okay, you got anything else?
The last thing that I will point out, just because this has nothing to do with my vacation, but it has everything to do with organizing your technology. We are getting upon back-to-school season. I think I make this reminder every year, but if you haven't listened to me in the past, when you're back-to-school shopping with your kids or you just happen to be in a store when it's back-to-school season, look for the little plastic pencil boxes. Because typically during the year, they cost around $3, but this is the time when they go on sale for 99 cents or 49 cents.
Right.
And you think, well, I don't have a lot of pencils. Why do I need to buy a bunch of these?
Mm-hmm.
They are great drawer organizers.
Ah.
So if you've got a bunch of, you know, cables and dongles and carrying cases and phones and external batteries and cameras and USB cables and all these other things, you pick up some of those and you basically take all your junk drawers and sort out everything and put them in the junk drawer because they're small enough to fit in there usually, and then you've got an easy filing system and not just a plethora of crap all over your drawer.
And specifically you're talking about the hard case pencil cases, not the soft vinyl ones.
Nope, hard case. Hard plastic. They're made by either Sterilite or there's a few that, like I think Walmart has an in-house brand of them. But for 99 cents or 49 cents, you can organize your whole junk drawer pretty quickly. I have one set of drawers over here that were a nightmare until last year. In fact, the set of drawers I have is a little Sterilite three-drawer rolling plastic set of drawers. It's nothing fancy. But junk was just, you know, would fall between cases, fall between parts, and I cleaned up two of the three drawers with those cases last year, and I think this year I'm going to go out and buy enough cases to do the third drawer and more. So I definitely recommend it, because this is the cheapest time of the year to get them. They're usually, you know, 50 to 75% off where they're usually at if you get them the rest of the year.
Okay, and I will add one more comment before we sign off, and that is, if you have an iPhone, you're going to have to wait until iOS, what's the next iOS coming out, 12?
12.
iOS 12 is released to get the Measure app on it. But if you have an Android device, Google released its Measure AR app a couple of weeks ago. If you have a phone that supports it, you know, basically one of the newer ones like the Pixel 2 line. The only thing is, you know, I took a look at it. I downloaded it since I have a Pixel 2 and it works on it. But I'll be darned if I know how this thing works. So, I mean, its UI is like, useless. It's you know, how I keep complaining about cueless, clueless UI, where it doesn't tell you what to do on the screen? This is one of those. So, anyway, I guess I should just, you know, I just looked at it for, like, 60 seconds, and since it wasn't obvious, I turned it off, or, you know, closed the app. But anyway, there you go. If you got a recent vintage Android device, you might want to see if the Google's own Measure AR app works on it. Works on mine. I just don't know how it works. So anyway. Alrighty, folks. So after 2 weeks, that's it. Really, no big news, huh? I mean, except for John's travel tips, but no, you know, breaking news kind of stuff all over.
We're on hiatus. Nothing broke.
Yeah. Nothing except broke. Comcast the other day, apparently.
Oh, well, yes. Well.
Comcast was down nationwide because I think Level 3 and some other stuff got backhoed. But anyway, all right. So that's the end of Movies Podcast 259. And John, are you more or less back for the summer?
More or less. Maybe a few weekends here and there, but more or less back for a while.
All right. So we'll be more or less regular then. And we'll talk to you next time.